Hello again, universe. Welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back to discuss the second episode of The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, entitled Gone, written by Nana Nkweti and Channing Powell, directed by Birdie and Bert, or Bert and Birdie, whichever you prefer. I'm kind of sad that they're not going to be directing the rest of this season because I really enjoy their directing style. They've done just a marvelous job of keeping the lighting correct for the luscious darkness of Denai. And we know as Black women that is an important factor not all directors take into account. And the fact that they had so many close-up shots of just how beautiful Denai truly is, as I've always stated, and that they were just so pristine that you could read every expression on her face was gorgeous. If you can't tell, I love this episode, clearly. I gave it a 10 out of 10. I did expect more people to be less inclined to jump into the details of this episode than the previous one, because Rick has been gone longer than Michonne from the official show, not to mention that seems to be where the action is at, and this is a story about catching us up to that action. And for some, it's preferable or more unconsciously a way to tune out of the importance that I think these characters that, yes, in typical Walking Dead fashion, if you will, are one-off characters, very likable characters, but die within a very short time span of knowing them. But I felt every death, and not only did I feel every death, particularly Nat's, they did it in such a short, effective amount of time to make it so I felt it. So they put the right emotions and the right factors into those scenes, into those characters, that affect our main character and their mental mindset going forward. All of that matters. And if that doesn't matter, then what those main characters that you love to get to, what they're doing, their motivations don't hit as close if you don't have that buildup of emotional intensity. And I think sometimes as viewers, we can get lost in that. We can get lost in the analytical aspect of it, as someone who definitely breaks down episodes, and lose the emotional impact of it all, even if you know that emotional impact is going to happen, or that you're going to lose that character, I should say, because sometimes the payoff does not hit the mark. And the example I use of this all the time is a certain Man in Black theory that came true. Yes, I'm talking about Westworld, one of my favorite shows of all time. And this episode reminded me of Westworld because of the music. I love the music in this episode, all of it. I mean, whoever is the, do you call that the cinematographer? No, not the cinematographer. Person who does the music. I can't think of their name right now or the title right now, but you know that person. The composer, Sam Ewing, that's the title. Thank you, brain. I do that all the time. They really selected the right tracks for each moment, and it did everything it needed to bring out feelings in you, unless you're a psychopath. We're dead inside. A few tidbits from last episode. I may owe Esteban an apology because even though we have 4 episodes left, he may have just been a good person. Rick having the murder jacket on. I didn't even think about him having the murder coat. That the coat he had on during the dream sequences kind of reflected the murder coat. Yes, that's what we call it in the fandom. And the bullet, I forgot to mention this one last episode, is what was he having the bullet on a string for? And he was pointing it at his head. And it reminded me of the bullet that Michonne gave Rick during Clear that we never saw him put in the gun. For some reason, I thought that bullet was going to have so much more meaning. I also like the way they're doing the titles. Years Gone, and the next episode is Bye. And then the last 3 are What We Become the Last Time. They are not fucking around giving me my epic love story. Let's jump into the recap because we got a lot of notes to get through. The gas man is here and sporting some gold slugs. That was a really cool walker. I like that they're still making the walkers cool. I didn't mention it last episode, but when Okafor, Thorne, and Rick were in their secret hiding spot, the walkers on the ground still being alive but barely moving was a nice touch. The gold teeth are not just a part of the rap community. It actually is a statement or a symbol of wealth in other countries as well. His shirt said, "Let me help you," and I'm going to make up his backstory that he was selling gas as a side hustle until, unfortunately, he died. It's not a very long backstory, but it seems to fit. A missile strikes and then he explodes before we go back to that damn bridge. If I gotta see that bridge one more time, you keep showing me that goddamn bridge. Michonne is given a rundown of her intentions, that she knows where Rick may be, was on her way to get there, saw 2 people that needed help, so she helped them. And while she's aware of what they have, she has a long way to get to her destination and could use some help herself, but totally understands if they aren't in a position to do so. Elle, the woman she is speaking to, is more interested in recruiting Michonne than giving her a horse. But Michonne is eager to be on her way, and she isn't keen on joining any community who leaves people behind because that's their mantra. Not to mention, I got kids and they need their father, and you seem to want me to give up on that in lieu of my asset status. I like that it's clear. You take one look at Michonne and you're like, I need that in my arsenal. How do I make that happen? There's something very wrong about this statement. When Elle said, "You saved my sister's boyfriend and my sister."
Excuse me, bitch?
Ma'am, how does one come out before the other in your mouth as if you're not blood related? Michonne has only so much time and needs to go to Bridger's Terminal, which is north. But it's told north is a not good place to go due to the migration of many walkers out of the tri-state area. So getting through them is an impossibility. I wonder if the CRM is hurting the hordes, because they said they don't know why, or if it's just some type of natural instinct, like animals, that they migrate in certain patterns based on what? When they know the meat is good? Because I don't know what their patterns would be. Michonne emphasizes yet again this is not the last stop for her, and that she's not down with stopping for no one. So if you ain't gonna give me a horse, that's fine. I'll be on my way. In walks a very hot Nat, who vows to leave due to the inability for him to go after his friends, and can't believe Elle would be so callous as to leave her sister.
Now fuck that bitch. Fuck that bitch.
They did such an incredible job with Nat telling us everything we needed to know about this character in very short, concise moments like these, where we know he's a good person. We know he would go against the rhetoric, which means he's more aligned with Michonne's thinking than with Elle's. He points out that he's the one that keeps their system going, so he's a leader even though he's not the one in charge. And there's two doors in that room, so he came in with his back to the room while addressing Elle, and because of his size could not have surveyed, which was a nice touch. Once he reconciles that his friends are safe, thanks to Michonne, he's humbled by her kindness and offers her VIP status. Let me get you your own wagon, what you need. But she demurs, again expressing her desire to leave. And upon seeing her resolution, unlike Elle, he no longer wastes her time and said, let's go get you a horse. She can have her pick. It was small, but there was motion in this scene that indicated before the reveal that they were effectively on a moving caravan that goes on for some miles. It's the perfect Western setting / Oregon Trail. This nomadic lifestyle is how many settled the West. By Michonne's look of approval, she definitely likes Nat. While she is out of range to talk to Judith, she keeps her walkie on to stay connected to home, to her kids. Shoto in Japanese means short sword, which is appropriate. After an hour, Nat tries to get her to stay even when her new friends take their sister's horse to present her as her preferred choice. Like, I can't wait to tell her ass. They're like, hold on. It's dusk. Don't you want to sleep in a bed? I want to equip you with some things so that you at least can get past Delaware. She asks, what the fuck is Scream Sticks? He pulled out the tape measure. We're going to be up all night making her a badass outfit. While for her kind consideration, she is going to have to deal with me teaching her the Scream Sticks before she's going to get some shut eye, because she says she's got to leave at dawn. I want Nat to do my apocalypse wardrobe, because he had that shit fire. Love the added brown in Michonne's locks. I don't know how she got them sun bleached, and I don't give a fuck to have it explained to me. They look gorgeous. I think she's always had a little bit of the light brown, but it looks particularly lovely in this scene with the green poncho, which reminded us a lot of how we first were introduced to Michonne at the end of season 3. What are Scream Sticks? You'll find out.
Really, nigga?
At dawn, they take her to a crossroads to say goodbye. She thanks them for everything, with Aiden feeling like Morgan with the circles analogy. However, it was clear to me she was caught up in the romanticism versus the reality of her own situation, unfortunately to her detriment. Not to say that's a negative thing, but it affected her choices and falls within the theme Nat continues to harp this episode, is you can know when to go. And she had that opportunity, and I think that's a lesson for a reason. Nat treaded not so lightly starting the conversation about Rick, but admits he likes only so many people in this world. Actually, just these three people. He adores Michonne despite the recent acquaintance and doesn't want to lose her. She imparts her own wisdom about the people they are with, knowing they are all too smart and good to allow people to simply be left behind. Nat equates it to before as well, that he didn't like it, but she points out it's even more important than before because there's not a lot of us alive now. So we need each other. we depend on each other, and the more that we can save and the more that's not left behind is how we continue to survive as a species in the face of things like massive hordes and the CRM. Nat says they're stupid, but Bailey points out fear has something to do with it before they wish her luck. Nat gives her a notebook she can talk to her kids in because he noticed that she wasn't able to speak to them on her walkie-talkie and then show it to them when she returns, despite him thinking and commenting several times how this is a suicide commission. I was just being nice. I really like that his pessimistic nature did not change throughout the entirety of the events, that he had a good indication of where he felt the end was going to lead, but in spite of that, he still wanted to support her endeavor. Because just because you don't believe in something doesn't mean someone can't inspire you to believe in it. And it's always important to have someone that's going to be the realist juxtaposed against the person that's going to have the faith. Michonne sees the massive horde between her and Destiny and tries out her new scream sticks, which causes a small explosion, enough to distract a few walkers, but not many. Then she strikes the gas man, causing an explosion, knocking his head into her, which causes her to fall off her horse.
Oh, that's awkward.
I think Michonne and Rick are one of the two characters that get the least amount, because they're leaders, to have really just funny moments and have a lightheartedness to their situation, because it's not life or death all the time. And to see them, or to see Michonne particularly, because we saw Rick smile last time dealing with Esteban, but particularly Michonne, and because of how she's built up from the comics to the show version and this ridiculousness of seeing Black women as only strong and tough, and you know, we got that scowl on our face and that's the only presentation that we can show of our complexity. Missing half the word. Connecting in that one word. It was good to see her even be like, yeah, I'm gonna need that drink because I'm embarrassed. Like, that was some bullshit. I got knocked off a horse by a head. It's a ridiculous moment for her that, yeah, in hindsight, you're like, the fuck was that? So I like that they injected a lot of that humor within these people that just are good. They're just living. That's not bad. Don't have bad intentions. That are just normal. And I like that both Aiden and Bailey, like, they're not, I'm not trying to hate on their acting, but Aiden especially always had this surprised look on her face every time there was any new news going on. I loved both of them so much because they did. They felt very realistic. The impossibility of it all is daunting, yet Michonne got that Jon Snow energy, taking off her sword and preparing to mow down as many as she can until, what, she collapses from exhaustion? When suddenly there is an illumination of purple from either side of her, Michonne's color, by the way, causing the walkers to part like the Red Sea, highlighting once again her queen status, royalty status. Aiden and Bailey have returned with the others, including Nat. They got satellites on their truck, which is awesome. Who knows, she needs a beer. Like I said, haven't been embarrassed like that. And they decided to stop being afraid and stupid anymore and invite her to join them, and others actually joined them, upon realizing that they too don't like living under this guise of leave anyone behind. Like, I have friends, man. That would be really hard for me to do. The aerial shots were really cool, especially the night one, seeing such a small fire surrounded by desolation. And yeah, it's easy to forget how small we humans are to the vastness of the country with our tiny fires, especially when there's less and less of us, and how very fucking dark it is, because I also lived out in the country, and man, when those lights go out, it's terrifying out there, okay? You need people around, and that's why you live close to neighbors. Like, people who just live by no one, I get it, but also, those people freak me the fuck out, because as introverted as I am, I need to know that I can scream and someone will hear me. Michonne is teased, y'all. Teased. Looking all comfortable and warm in her lovely getup. She asks about the purple light, and we find out Nat has been planning to leave for a while now and had all the tools to do so for clearing valleys in his red wagon, along with the rest of his toys. I also wonder what's going to happen to the Oregon Trail people, because it seemed as if he was the person that mapped out the routes and helped out those routes. And now that they lost that commodity, are we going to see them again? I don't need to, but it would be something to know, even though her sister died, that Elle, realizing what she did and how she could have helped and all of that. Like I said, choices. It's not so much about them all being or have lined up to a happy ending, but they weigh on you. So while Nat and Aiden wanted to go after her, he could have left years ago and knew at that time it was time, but remained around because complacency versus risk is a part of life. I mean, it's a very human part of life. And there's nothing wrong to even be complacent, even though, of course, my mindset always, especially now even more, is all about the risk. And yet I have not written one part of my novel as I speak of that sentence. Someone's like, oh, what do you do to wait? Just do it. Just do it. And yet I still like all these things I have to do. So yeah, it's not a judging thing, but it is one of those bit of questions you have to ask during your human experience of when do I take the risk and when do I remain complacent? He can burn and build things seemingly attached to that lighter of his. I also love his similarity to Michonne, even though they don't have the same backstory. The idea that she herself can burn and build things, that she's done both. But he knows it takes more than that to survive at the end of the world, something she showed both Bailey and Aiden and himself. So now they will take her as far as she needs to go. Aiden looked a bit concerned at the big step that they are taking, something Michonne clocked. So once Nat goes to bed and Bailey goes off to find her food, Michonne asks if she's pregnant. She confirms and that it was her craving for honey, which was the reason why Bailey was out there and why he hurt his ankle, but also why they found her. Michonne had already assured them that they were going to go back to Alexandria with her, but upon realizing that Aiden is pregnant, she's like, no, you and Bailey can go now. Take a couple people with you. It'll take you a couple of weeks to get there, maybe a week or so. I said a couple of weeks, then week or so. Didn't make sense. But Aiden wants to be there for the Michonne reunion, a costly decision. Another decision of not knowing when to go, or another chance or opportunity of not knowing when to go. It's not like she was being irrational, because I could see someone being like, okay, you were pregnant, you needed to go on that way. There's nothing to say in those 2 weeks something could have happened to her. There's nothing to say going forward with Michonne for, what, another 24 hours? And if they were so close and they really wanted to start this new chapter in their life with their new friend who's done so much for them, they want to see her be rewarded. There's nothing innately wrong in her decision other than it came with a risk, right? And maybe some people would be like, well, that risk is too much for... Yes, hindsight's always that, right? And it's so easy to judge a decision in absolutes when you're not in that moment. And the simple fact of it is, more people than not will be in that moment and make the irrational decision because we are a species are irrational. And the more you deny it, the more you just convey how irrational we are. We can't outrun statistics, no matter how assured of your own choices one can believe. Nat explains that while he only likes three people the very next day, everyone went up a letter grade because he was able to get those people not only to follow him, but they wanted to follow him. I like the use of letters in this sentence because the CRM are all about A's and B's, but the system is fundamentally flawed because Nat himself was a B, yet upgraded to an A. Because not only was he able to decide, I no longer want to be a B, I no longer want to be complacent, I'm going to do what I believe in, die for what I believe in. Other people saw that and followed him. So he is essentially a leader. But one would expect upon arrival to think he was a B. Nat gives us his backstory. His father, an asshole of a man, left not wanting a little kid. He grew up bullied with a mom working 14 hours at a chicken shack and was starting to turn towards a pretty destructive path, blowing things up and setting them on fire in the woods. And this reminds me of Michonne, and they explored it a little bit with that mushroom trip that she had in season 10. That episode was wild for the fact that it was just so out of left field and fun. Because if she had turned away from Andrea, who knows what would have happened to her if she continued living that solitary path where she no longer connected to helping or wanting to help people. Her mom met a guy named Danger who didn't see a challenge but an opportunity and manifested his capacity to burn things into building them instead by having issues only he can help him fix. And in the end, he realized that. Sounds like you loved him. I guess I did. I love you, Nat. I love you too, Nat. Why we gotta just ruin everything like this? A helicopter is spotted, and of course they have no reason to be alarmed because it's an odd thing to see. You up in the apocalypse ain't seen a helicopter in years, like, hold on, is that the military? And then they don't announce their intentions. Then they start getting closer. Clearly they were too close to the hidden city. And then their nefarious tensions are known when they start dropping chlorine gas.
Hell to the no, to the no, 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 no. Hell no, no, to the no, no. Hell to the no, no.
To the no, 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 no.
Hell to the no, no.
To the no, 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 no.
Chemical warfare was a smart choice because they could have easily dropped some bombs on them because it increases the tyrannical nature of the CRM. And now you can imagine what happened to 90,000 people in Omaha. And you are now intimately familiar with the chaos and the mayhem and the horrible death that those people, men, women, and children felt, babies. If you are into World War II, many are fascinated with that war among any other war because of how atrocious the crimes to humanity really were on all sides, right? It's easy to point at Hitler and the Nazis and go, they were the bad guys. They were, no one had their hands not bloodied and in absolutely monstrosity type level ways. I could have said monstrous, but it wasn't coming out at the time. Forgive me. Even Hitler wasn't down with chemical warfare. It affects the respiratory system and eyes, chlorine gas. It is one of the most, like I said, if you're going to look up on it, be very, very, very cautious because you need to be prepared for the images that you may see. But it's one of the most cruelest ways to kill another human being. I don't give a fuck what type of war we're at. Because in the end, you gotta live with yourself afterwards. And this is, I think, should these things come to light, the populace of bees isn't gonna sit there and be like, oh, that's totally cool that you do that for our security. Yeah, no one's gonna live with that. That is what we call a war crime. Really cool seeing Michonne kill walkers in the yellow mist. The strength of her character is highlighted as she is the one that goes to get respirators from the medical supply store later on. Poor Nat gets it pretty bad, but is able to break into a store with Michonne killing the walkers that were inside. They get Aiden to a bed. However, we see she's barely with it. She's foaming at the mouth. She's definitely got the worst of it. They're struggling to get air. She tells Michonne to go back to her babies, to not risk it like she did. Some wondered if a couple of the reactions I watched, if she was kind of blaming Michonne here, but no, she made her own decision. Michonne wanted her to go back and she decided to stay. But she is wanting to impart that to Michonne, someone else that she cares about. Don't risk your babies. Michonne must feel immense guilt, even though they made their own choices, because she inspired them and felt responsible because they were there because of her. She tells Bailey not to fall asleep next to his pregnant girl, and that's when I think he realized she wasn't going to make it. But by the blood on the pillow, he clearly didn't listen and how he turned. He wasn't going to live without her and his unborn child and decided to die with her, even though he did tie her up so that she wouldn't harm his friend. Should have tied himself up too if he was really thinking that far ahead. But that is beyond the point. I think that the tragedy of it all is what hit home when Michonne returns and with a heavy heart has to put Aiden down, then finds Bailey in another room where Nat, feeling helpless, had started a fire to surround himself in, which saved his life. Nat is still alive, thanks her for doing what he couldn't for Bailey, whom he loved the most, before encouraging Michonne to also return home at her earliest convenience because she is risking so much. She's risking a chance for what she already has. Michonne isn't ready for that yet.
You can't get rid of me, bitch. I'm not going nowhere. I'm not going no fucking where.
Nat explains it was chlorine gas that they released because he read about it when he was young, wanting to blow up the football team with it. I'm not sure if it was him who also yelled out, cover your mouths and wet your cloths. It's going to take a while for them to get better, if they get better. We see how weak Michonne is trying to do one push-up. It takes a little over a year for them to heal, because you see the seasons going by. I love the montage, the way these two episodes, they married each other perfectly. And they're smart by giving directors two episodes apiece so that you can keep it tight, because that's how you keep it tight. I don't know why CW just can't catch that memo. But I digress. Nat is also struggling with his own choices, as he knew he was supposed to go. And if he had and taken them with him, then they wouldn't have been dead. And you have to know when to go, and you have to know when to give up. And it's clear, with the continued passage of time, Michonne is still stubbornly fixated, with the boots out and everything, about reaching her destination. Not only that, she may feel as if it's too late now. Like, I had this opportunity, and now because of this and not being able to get better, being stuck, as they both mention, that she isn't able to get to him and help him. And she tells Nat that you gotta believe that love is the reason why your stepdad, Danger, didn't give up on you. They both eventually get better, with Nat watching Michonne's faith continue despite his own ideas about her goal. When she gives him a map to Alexandria, I love this between them, because they're vulnerable, but they both are very self-assured people. And she doesn't want to lose him. He doesn't want to lose her. But she needs to do what she needs to do, and he will not allow her, as he says in this moment, to do it alone, but because she is all he has left. You're my family now. So whether you find him or not, I'm gonna be there.
They ask you how you are, you just have to say that you're fine when you're not really fine, but you just can't get into it because they would never understand.
It does once again remind me of Andrea, how they had that bond, just taking care of each other through that year that they spent time. And at the end, she loses both of them, even though Andrea did it to herself. Michonne reluctantly concedes and asks if him coming is because he wants to see how it ends. And he replies, "I know how it ends," staring very ominously at that lighter. Matthew Jeffers is the actor that plays Nat. He and Danai have amazing chemistry. I was happy to learn that Danai and he had worked together on a play. So their bond really, really felt lived in. And that made sense when I got all that back information. But it's certainly, like Andrea, the person that leads her back to Rick, and why she was chasing the governor in season 3 with an agenda that didn't have forgiveness written on the outside of the postcard. So keep that in mind. I love that he also managed to get a chuckle out of both of them by saying, "Okay, I need to get my cart. I'm also going to fix this wagon." "What, you expecting me to pull it?" "Yeah, I am." Seeing the hope in Michonne's face, then seeing it vanish, was a gut punch. And the fact that it was done in such a malicious fashion, to have "Safe Harbor" written on the outside of this place, but then have bodies piled by humans, because only humans are going to have this type of organization, having stripped them of their shoes and then left them like that, not even a burial. The anger in her spirit as she once again sees the trail of the CRM is just so well done and necessary. So necessary. I love the subtlety of the brittleness of people, not zombies, once again, being the true evil in this world. Crying, she holds on to Rick's boots, trying to feel connected to that feeling of hope once again. Nat comes to wrap her up. To know he's still with her, I feel like he's been preparing himself for the words he intends to impart in this moment of comfort. Just by stating the facts. He tells her the meaning of the words on her phone in Japanese means believe a little bit longer. She points out, you've been telling me to go home. However, despite his cynicism and her search, he knows that whatever faith she has, she can still retain it and still go home to her kids. You can know when to go. You can do both. You searched, you didn't find him, but you can believe he's still out there. And that one day you may see him again. Or you can believe he's still out there and one day you may never see him again and focus on your children. He also repaired her walkie. Nice callback to Morgan, by the way. Morgan and Rick with the walkie. And he affirms, I can do it with you. I will. And that's when Michonne breaks down and starts crying. And we all did. And I was like, we need to hurry up and get back to the moment of hope. Because I'm not okay. As they are heading back, they see a CRM helicopter. And the way he said, it's them.
You're all going to die down here.
Both Nat and Michonne had revenge on their mind. And they didn't even question it. She's like, I'm not running. Who said anything about running? No. I like that, though. Because it's telling us, the audience, once again, that Michonne is not in the same headspace that Rick is right now. He feels he's being pushed between love and honor, trapped into the role of power, whereas Michonne only here because her man is, and after what she lost to be in this position, she gone fuck them bastards up with very hostile intent. They saw that helicopter and thought the first one was a dud. Then they take it down. They see more out there, even though they're in an open position. They still ain't running. They say, come on out that can. Come on out that can. They even said, happy hunting. Michonne went straight up gangsta and said, look at me. We ain't seen this Michonne in a while. While she was wanting to defeat, you know, Negan, I don't think she had this very abrasive personal crusade on her hands. It was about protecting her people and her community as a leader. Right now, she feels like this is about my heart and how you broke it. And someone's got to answer for that. Serendipitous, that is how one explains things happening that doesn't seem relevant until it is. Like Rick losing his hand so that when Michonne would have chopped it off, it was perfectly protected. There was a lot of criticism in the fandom. I feel more from the male side of view that Rick chopped off his hand seemingly for no reason and then got captured. I think maybe the relevance of that was missed because it was more of an irrational, as I pointed out in the first episode, emotional decision. When you are stuck in a glue trap, you will chop, you will bite your own freaking leg off to escape it. It was meant to convey the desperation because clearly Rick didn't have a fucking plan. But because of the three times before, which we don't even fucking know what happened afterwards. And he even said, I haven't even gone into those details. Because if you think all he got was talkings, I think that you guys are underestimating the CRM. Another point I saw brought up quite often is, oh man, it's good she didn't shoot down Rick, man. How is she Rick? She didn't know Rick was in with these motherfuckers at all. She had no wherewithal that Rick was fucking with the people that are now her enemies. Like, that didn't cross her mind. All she saw was the helicopter and the people that needed to be killed in said helicopter. She wasn't looking for Rick. She wasn't taking them helmets off to confirm that Rick wasn't with them. She was down to kill. The removing of the helmets was just personal satisfaction. And it's clear, yes, she could have shot down Rick. But it was Okafor's choice to let Rick fly, meaning where Rick would have sat, Okafor was, which is another one of those weird coincidences. Another note, Nat had been intending to take some motherfuckers out, having made these rockets for that exact intent and purpose and practicing for that intent and purpose. Now let's talk about the reunion, because that reunion was everything that I ever wanted, ever needed, ever desired. They knew what Rishon shippers wanted, and we have never ate this damn good. Chicken ring, hot dog and bologna, chicken and macaroni, chilling with my homie. The caress of the face, my Rick curls. It was raining for some reason. Maybe it's just moisture in the air because they that hot. The caress of the face. Already say that? But I need to say it again. The hug with Michonne crying that she found him. And Rick's stuttering shame. I'm not with them. And then her immediately being like, I know. Because I know you. I know my man. Like, he was scared. She wouldn't know him from them. But she knows her boo-boo and tells him Judith is alive and well. And that's when they can give in to their physical attraction. And that kiss was serving too much goodness. You got that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum, that yummy, yummy. Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yummy. At that point, the tears had dried. I was just rolling around on the ground with a pillow clutched to my abdomen in the fields department. Rick, upon hearing the rumbling, is back in reality and even more terrified to Michonne's concern, especially when he tells her to say she helped in the attack and to hide who she is. Hide who I am? Strong and a leader. Mentally, Rick's back to when Negan tried to force him to cut off Carl's hand and then had him chasing walkers for like no fucking reason. He's back to I'm eating shit and thanking you for it stage. But it's been harder for him. He ain't been surrounded by hopeful folks. It's not been a year since he ain't seen his family. It's been fucking 9. And everyone in this place, even Esteban, has conspired to keep him to stay. Or to illuminate the benefit of staying. It emphasizes the absolute trust, though, that Michonne has in her man. Wanting me to go back with him to the enemy, mind you, promising to get them both out when your ass didn't escape after 9 years. But it's her Rick, and she knows they've been down this road before, deciding fuck them helicopters and focus on the fact that they're together once again. Because I was like, how far are they? What's the ETA? Who gives a fuck? We need some more kissing. So focused was I that I forgot my baby Nat, who gets shot by some impossibly alive piece of shit that Rick handled with Michonne's blade while Michonne runs to her friend. I love that even dying, his last concern is for her to make sure that she's good with a very valid question. Can you tell if it's him? And she says, I can. And he says, see, you can still believe and know when to go. Now, I am concerned if Michonne may have to go back without Rick because I can't see how they can both without a sacrifice, but that's because I have no foresight right now, because all I can see is red. Because they took my baby Nat, and all I want to do is what I've been saying from episode one.
I'm going to kill you. Not today. Not tomorrow. But I'm going to kill you.
We can't even mourn Nat long because Rick has to retrieve everything from Alexandria from her before explaining they will be separated, but he'll find her. That shot of him having his gun on her, we ain't seen that since season 3. And while I love the moments before, this shit got intense real quick, anteing up them stakes of the game that they are now both playing. Michonne's smile mirrored Rick's from the last episode of the show, if you decided to check in on that clip. I say clip because I ain't watched them last season. Was it a 10 and 11? I keep thinking it was 10, but that's just the last time I saw Michonne. Michonne decides to go in as Dana, which is kind of one letter off from Deny, but also maybe a callback to Deanna. She gives an amalgamation of truths and experiences. She lived in Georgia with her boyfriend in a community with bad leaders. She was out there for a long time, always knowing when to go. That was Nat. But the initial bit of her story is her own backstory without a lot of details. Her sister, Elle, Aiden's sister, her weapon of choice, a bow staff, which she lost a little while ago, Morgan. What's here is what she's been looking for. It's what she's been trying to believe in a little while longer. And it reeks of honesty because everything she said is true. She passes the test as a consignee and looks upon her new military base. I said her new military base, which is on the outskirts of the city, so no pedestrians will be harmed when Rishon enacts mayhem. Rick, decked out in his military gear, is never not going to be sexy, approaches her from behind and grabs her arm. That gas, then that smile. They're really trying hard to send me into cardiac arrest. And then that Rick moan of pleasure when they was making out. I said, hold on, I didn't set the mood. I need to go get my candles. Do I need my KY? Do I need my towel? On some for real, it's been 9 years since he tapped that ass. He gonna beat it into the mattress.
I'm the ice cream man, she chunky monkey.
She realizes he has a missing hand and he admits it happened during one of the last times he escaped. We all know what Michonne was thinking. What the fuck you mean last time? He admits he was trapped, but they no longer have him and that he will get away. He will get away with her. And I'm not sure if that's all the way true because he said, I'm in, granted, some hours ago, but things have shifted. Your protection under Okafor running interference is done. Rick died a year ago, our Rick, mentally, though he still has the fire she lights in his belly, making me think that part of him is still intent on doing good, but not knowing when to go. Because I'm going back to that moment where he was looking at the bullet, and I'm thinking, is he going to do something? It's not realistic to me in my mind that Rick ain't got nothing going on behind those beautiful blue eyes of his. He's not that one. Even if it is something that they will never know, as he's pointed out, would do. Like if it's a suicide mission, whatever the fuck, he intends on making a change here. Or maybe he's not. Maybe I'm feeling optimistic about how much they broke him. I reaffirm that they will get away. I do believe that. But that whatever, if my initial assumption is correct, whatever his original intentions were, he's made some calculations that include him making it home. Michonne is about to tell Rick about RJ, but she ain't talked to them in a year, and Rick don't need that right now, emotionally fragile as he is, so she stays clear of that conversation and that they can have it when this is done. I love that she said she's us, Rick. I don't know any places where I go on the internet where anyone's giving Michonne flack about it, but I did cruise through today of someone else saying it was on their timeline. Yeah. I don't know why anyone wouldn't understand she didn't tell him in this moment. He was freaking out just thinking about Judith. If you let this man know he's got a baby out there, he ain't met a son for the son they both lost. That's a huge, like, for her, it's something she's already went through. But for Rick, that's good. Like, that's a blessing and a curse. Because, and also a source of gonna be pain. Rick didn't get to see him born. He didn't get to see his first words. All the things he's gonna be thinking of missing being stuck here. But I also think that might be the bomb she needs to wait to drop on him. Cause that may be that what ignites that rage. Considering all the time they've kept him stuck here and not allowed him to get back to his family. Like, oh shit, you had me missing not only Judith, but you had me missing my son? Nah. Because he was able to imprint on her, right? He's not been able to do that with his child. And I think she knew rightly that that would have been fucking with his head, and he's already got a lot going on. He'll feel the extra weight of that responsibility. And she needs to pull him back to Rictatorship, because right now he's very timid in the face of the CRM. And she needs to manage that. He says, if I pass you a note, burn it after reading. She updates him on the fact that the CRM is killing innocent people and wonders if he has had to do anything of the sort, but he hasn't, as he hasn't upgraded to echelon briefing status yet, which is where I think the I'm in came from, because he needed to enact his next part of the plan to join into that. And you do have to be in this for a while. It's not like everyone's getting in the halls of power, if you will. And I think that Okafor may be playing two sides of the game, because he was very versatile. And that he may have assured Beale something about Rick, or because he definitely got homegirl to drink the Kool-Aid, Thorn, that Rick would do the same, but that they were both be close to Beale and be able to check him where they're at. Rick saying he didn't know, but also knew is knowing that feeling that something is wrong, if you're paying attention. And it emphasizes that as a society, being aware is important. Maybe not about everything, but listening to your gut feelings, because there's not been a moment that he's been in the CRM and he's been like, yeah, they're totally the good guys. He heard about Omaha and was like, people did this? I don't think people can take out 90, unless you're 90,000 strong. Think about it. Don't fall under the umbrella of just being told and told and told. You need to be able to comprehend and find out for yourself, even if you don't have all the information. Michonne asks if they can stop them. He's like, no. Can we at least try? I felt that. She didn't say, let's take them all out. She said, can we enact some violence? Can we Achilles heal them just a bit? But Rick thinks that going against them is going to eliminate any chance to get back home. Michonne takes Nat's lighter after Rick offers it in his condolences. He has no idea what she has been through and vice versa. They are here now, though. She's here now. We gonna figure out how to do both, because I've got personal beef. And the more I hear about your experiences, the hotter the flames are gonna be regarding my wrath, which I felt was perfectly immolated in the next scene when Michonne climbs up that ladder and surveys her surroundings, not in trepidation, as many concluded, but flicking that lighter with ill intent. She just gotta get Rick back to the Rick he is at his core, which should make for some pretty interesting dialogue on her part.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
Someone else in the military knows Rick's secrets and makes their way to his room. Yes, it's Bangs, as my baby girl Lacey calls her. She knows she committed to the Dumb and Dumber look. But Jadakiss has always put her eggs in the wrong basket, ending up with yolk on her face. And that seems to be where she once again is headed, coming into this man's room after he just found the love of his life, threatening to kill everyone he loves if they dare escape.
How about I do anyway?
Girl, I know you got blood on your hands, but I need you to have preservation of life. Spoiler alert, she doesn't. Continuing on with, I like those people. You like those people. We have a deal. Likely, I didn't mention that you were an A instead of a B, even though that shit came out anyway. I didn't mention our mutual past. And we've been living our lives without conflict. Looks like she hasn't seen him in a while. But Michonne has shown up. She was sent to investigate what happened with the crash, whom she compliments, saying if anyone was to find him, it was going to be her. Jadakiss, however, isn't going to risk her new life of comfort and power for whatever she thinks Rick is getting up to, because she's clearly retained a secure position within the CRM. She doesn't want to clash with Rick, but she knows that he must be up to something. Because I'm not going to let you run off together. That doesn't cover this deal. And you got one foot in and one kind of out. You're in my wheelhouse in the military over here. You've chosen this path. What the fuck are you doing?
You could tell I took a dab if you look into my eyes.
I did like her yes, yes, yes. She embraces her unlikability perfectly. And she tells him, I've done things, I've spilled a lot of blood, and I will continue to do so. I wonder what this conversation is going to be like, because I can't imagine that Rick is going to react in the manner I would want, which is to snap her neck right then and there. And he's going to have to play, and I like that a lot, of politics. Rick has learned a lot in the shadows the last 9 years. And I think that's more what she's referring to than the arrival of Michonne. Because Michonne being there feels very much like it is, like it has been, like it happened, like, oh, it's her. You two know each other. You bumped into each other. She's not asking for the story. She doesn't care about the story. But she does know he has something up his sleeve, and she needs to know what the fuck it is. And how he utilizes her, because they've been friends, they've been enemies, and they've also betrayed, well, she betrayed him until she had to slink back like a fool. And we saw in his vision, he was seeing the grinder, which is kind of like the same one she grinded up her friends in. So is he going to maybe possibly snap her neck and make the body disappear? That'd be great. That is going to conclude my recap and review of the episode, which turned out way longer than I thought it was going to be. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, wherever good podcasts can be found, go down to the rating section, drop some stars, leave a review. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. If you want to send feedback, which we are about to jump into, blackercouch@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment below. Mimi has been offline dragging me for filth because I would not accept her her theory last week, because she's like, you can't act like that's not a possibility. I'm like, I'm not acting like it's an impossibility. I refute it as a possibility. These are different things. If it was any other show, sure, that could be a plot point, a reasonable assumption of scenarios, but this is not any other show. This is fucking Rashawn. What you said was crazy talk. We don't talk crazy around here. So let's hear what she has to say this week.
Lay up, motherfucker.
What up, this is Mimi. This is Feedback for the Ones Who Live. Episode 2, this was a Michonne-focused episode. I really, really enjoyed it. I was hoping I could watch it again, but I couldn't, and I was like, I gotta sit down. I was able to watch it, at half of it on my lunch break, and then the morning after it aired. I don't have AMC Plus. I got it like a free trial, and then I got rid of it, so I'm not gonna pay extra just to see it earlier. I can see it on Sunday, so I'm just gonna watch it on the regular channel. Anywho, I almost didn't send feedback because you got on my nerve last week. I think it annoys me more because literally every time me, you, and Shy watch something, you literally all the time say something like, talking out the other side of my mouth. But this the hill you're going to die on? Okay. All right. All right, 6 years is a long time, and I don't care what you say, Rick burning the phone and Rick burning the letters is him saying, all right, I think the search is up. Michonne, I feel like, was the other side of the coin. Like, I feel like her episode was focused on that whole saying, just hold on a little bit longer. Like, I feel like you can always hope and dream that something can happen, but also give up saying, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. But always have that morsel of hope in the back of your mind that maybe one day you'll get what you want. And I feel like that's how Rick was. Of course, he's going to always pick Michonne, but that doesn't mean that he didn't say, I think I'm stuck here. I don't know what his plan is going to be, but he sure told her, like, come with me. I feel like now they both stuck. Unless he was like, my girl going to get us out of this, which I can see because we know Michonne is not the one to be fucking with. She really, literally went after the governor. That was another, now that I think about it, they wouldn't let people leave either. And she left. And dude sent Merle, old racist, raggedy ass, after Michonne. And Michonne literally fought her way back into the governor's area just to fuck with him. So, I mean, if somebody could leave, it'd be Michonne. I will say I haven't watched The Walking Dead in so long. I forgot how much it hurts when you care about a character and you want to see them win and make it to, you know, wherever their destination is, and then they end up dying before they get there. Like, those deaths in that damn, when they got bombed, that shit hurt. And this is the thing that I say all the time. Like, the zombie apocalypse, like, if that shit were any kind of apocalypse, if it happened, it's not like the virus or the zombies or the infection is going to kill you, you're probably going to die from the hands of another human, because those are the ones you need to watch for. Like, I say it all the time, like, walk, like, we know for walkers, you can walk with them. Like, we had those people who put the faces on. You could cover yourself in their guts and just walk alongside of them. Or you could just learn how to fight with a weapon that you can, like Michonne did. Katana. And just slice their head off as you walk through. Like, it's not the walkers that's the problem. Like, I feel like anybody that made it this far, if you were out in the world, there ain't no way you're gonna die from a walker. You're gonna die from another human. Now, I remember when we met the people from Alexandria, them motherfuckers were just lucky because they were all lame as hell. They died out pretty quickly. But the people that I didn't watch I don't remember the last episode, like when Michonne found that the girl and the guy. I can't even tell you who they are or how Michonne saved them. I feel like I should know, but I don't remember. Nor do I care. But when I found out old girl was pregnant, craving honey, and her man went out to go save her, and then he went to go get her honey and surprise her, and then something happened to him, and she went to go after him, and her sister was just gonna leave her to die. Like, that was a pretty sad story. Michonne found them and saved them, and they were like, okay, we think it's time to leave, let's go. And then we have Nate, and I'm not gonna lie, like, when he got shot, I was really fucking sad. Like, my eyes teared up because the motherfucker was the bomb. Like, him and his danger lighter and him and them fucking bazookas that he created. Like, you need a motherfucker like that in your life. That actually, he is the guy Eugene pretended to be. And it pisses me off that he died and Eugene just walking around somewhere with his funky ass mullet alive. How is he still alive? I know I bring this up every time anybody talks about The Walking Dead, but he makes me sick. How is he alive? There's no way. He's not good at anything. And he's not even that fucking smart. Ugh, God. Nate, I wasn't ready for that. It makes me so sad. How you make it to the zombie apocalypse, you make it through this long, leave the comfort or whatever the hell you were with those fucking circus people. That's all I can think of. Whenever I saw them and they're like, they're, it looked like, I don't know, they were like Little House on the Prairie, they're migrating. they look like the circus people. Like, this, what kind of life is this? Y'all suck. And also, how did old girl's sister become the leader? She seems like a pussy. I feel like I could have taken her out. Like, if we got into a fight, I would beat her up. But anywho, I was really sad that he died. Like, I wasn't ready. I wasn't expecting it. I thought him and Michonne were gonna make it. But it was hilarious how quick Rick switched sides. He was saving all those people, like when they got out of the he was following protocol when they got out of the helicopter and it crashed. And as soon as he saw Michonne, he was like, fuck you hoes, I'm out. Dude shot Nate. All Rick needed to know is Nate was with Michonne and Soldier's gone. Now all you bitches is dead. I don't know, like, why he would, like, want, like, I'm assuming he just wanted her with him. And he was like, you know, I'll figure it out later. Because when I saw Janice, old raggedy, stanky, it's Jadis. I have disliked her fungly, stanky face since, weren't they like, didn't they live in a garbage place? Like, wasn't it like a, I don't know, a landfill that they lived in? Ugh. I just keep thinking about her trying, like, saying something to Michonne about, like, can I get a turn with Rick? And that looked Michonne. She was like, I know you fucking lying. Bitch, you better stop sniffing around my man. And then Rick tried to make it up to her with that little weird cat sculpture. Oh man, I miss them so much. But like, first of all, who decided to cut her hair like that? Like, Jesus Lord, why? If I was the actress, I'd have been like, look, y'all can make me look ugly all you want. You can make me be hated, but please don't put this bowl cut on me. I already look weird as hell. Please don't make me wear this haircut. Like, they literally look like they stuck a bowl on top of her head and shaved around it. The bob, like, she had made her look weird anyway. But this bowl cut, Lord. And I'm like, I want to know if Rick knows that, like, I'm assuming he does know she's the reason that he's here at that place, because the way they were talking to each other. And I just am trying to understand why Rick would bring Michonne there knowing Jadis is there and she knows who Michonne is. Like, you can't say that's Dana to her, because she knows that it's not Dana. She knows who Michonne is. She knows Michonne is your wife and you guys have a daughter. She don't know about RJ either, but she knows that that's Yobu Zhang. So I don't know if he was just, his mind was just clouded, or he just felt like Michonne was the missing piece that he needed to be able to escape, or she would escape. Because he doesn't seem like he feels confident enough that the two of them can take these people down. Especially when Michonne seen straight up with her own eyeballs the way they kill people. Like, what was that gas for? Like, why are you, like, you see these people are alive. Are, like, do you just assume that they're all A's because they're walking around and they're not afraid, they're not cowering? Like, you gotta be crazy. Like, I just, for the life of me, don't understand. Like, people have been out this long. You want them on your team. Like, you don't want people to be, they gotta be hiding something, because it's just too big of a loss to lose people that have been out in the world during the zombie apocalypse for this long. They have to have some type of skill set. Otherwise, they would have died a long time ago. It's crazy. I don't know. I have no idea what this Republic is all about. Why they're going around killing people. Where they getting this fucking gas from. That shit looked awful. Like, the way that it, like, bruised up, burned up their lungs. Like, and Nate, what a loss. Like, he was smart. He knew chemicals. He knew treatment for chemicals. Like, what? That man was an asset. And I am really sad that he's gone. I'm so sad. I hope he got to be with his stepdaddy. That was a really sweet story. And I'm sad that he's gone. I really hate when The Walking Dead does this. It doesn't happen very often where they'll get a side character that's new that I'll immediately love and want him to stay. And then they always kill him. They always do it to me. I should have known. But I guess it would give Michonne even more motivation to get the fuck out of that place. So I guess there's that. I just want to just touch on one thing before I end this rambling that I call feedback. Next episode, like, I would like to say that so far my point wasn't proven or disproved. Because Rick is always going to pick Michonne. And when he saw her, I stand on what I said. He looked shooketh. Like, this is the last thing he expected. Michonne and his look were not the same. They were both very happy to see each other, hence the making out. But it's different. And now we're going to see how Pearl reacts. And someone on the timeline said something that made a lot of sense. Like, Rick is gonna ask Pearl something. Like, in the preview, he said something about, you know, she saved my life, or something like that. And, you know, Pearl is gonna get suspicious, because why do you care about this person? You don't care about nobody else. You didn't care about Esteban, who was trying to be your friend for years, but now, like, I don't know, and I can't help but think that more than Okafor saw those phones. And I'm not saying that they'd be able to tell that it was Michonne from the phone, but they did have, like, braids or locks. And now this beautiful black woman with locks showed up, and now you all of a sudden want to help her. Dana, sounds, she doesn't seem like she's a B. She seems very A. Like, when we see her killing them walkers in the preview, come on, Michonne, I'm going to need you to tone it back a little bit. You're letting all your secrets out. So I'm very curious to know how this next episodes go, because I think that you're forgetting, yes, the episodes and was written and produced, and the storyline all came together with Denai and Andy, but Scott Gimple was the showrunner for The Walking Dead for a long time, and he's a reshowner too. But you still gotta make a show angsty. You gotta make it entertaining, and you gotta throw curveballs. Like, that's one thing I feel like you're acting like The Walking Dead don't do: throw curveballs. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not even saying he smashed old girl, but him choosing to help that little orphan, and because I didn't go back and listen, but you said I was wrong when Pearl said that, you know, we were meant to all find each other so we could be a family. She might have not said it like that in those exact words, but that's what she meant. And I took that as Rick saying, I might not be able to get my family back. I might not be able to save, you know, see the world. I can save the world, and they may never know it was me, but I can do at least do that, you know, that now that you're here on this planet. So, like, I don't understand how it's impossible for you to think that Rick would want to care for a girl that's an orphan, and essentially Pearl she has nobody either. She doesn't even have a friend. Now, I'm not saying that he would pick them over Michonne. That's not what I said, and I feel like that's the way you're acting. I'm saying that 6 years is a long time to be waiting out. 6 years, 5 years, you tried to escape a bunch of times and you got nowhere, and you lost one of your hands. After a year that you decide to move on, a year is a long time. It's whether you want to talk out the other side of your mouth or not. A year, widows date other people. People that get divorced after a year start dating other people. A year is a long time, especially when you're lonely, okay? So I just want you to be realistic. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did, because you got to make these shows angsty. And it's 6 episodes, and shit needs to get real, and I'm all for it. And I feel like that might even give Pearl a reason to be, you know, more suspicious for Michonne, because she could see how Rick is acting different. And I don't think you would be able to see that difference if you didn't have some type of intimacy, even if it's just we're close friends. You get what I'm saying? Like, if y'all are just coworkers, you wouldn't be able to tell if they're acting different or not. That's not something you would notice. But if you have a very intimate, special relationship with someone, you could tell that, like, why all of a sudden, since this girl showed up, that you acting like you ain't never met? You acting funny. And why you keep sneaking off? How come you got up in the middle of the night and you were gone all day? That shit she would notice, because she was there. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm just trying to tell you that for you to just kick my theory to the moon and act like I'm the worst human being on the planet and I'm stupid and it's terrible and I should burn in hell is a little bit much, especially for you. And for the record, just because of the way you're acting, whenever you say something that I don't like, I'm going to act like an asshole, just like you did. Especially if it's a ship that I like that you don't care about, because you don't care about 99.9% of ships. I'm going to act a fucking fool, just like you did. I can't wait. It's going to be great. Anyway, I'm going to end it here. Until next time, love, peace, hair grease, and black girl magic. Queen of the Couch, Mimi, out.
That was Queen Mimi with her thoughts on the episode. I'm glad you liked it. I was going to bring up that Nat was like Eugene, but the version we wanted instead of Eugene, but I knew you were going to say something about it, so I let you have your day. She's also lying, guys. She was totally going to send feedback. She was double, triple checking to make sure she sent feedback, because mainly because she wanted to press her point once again. And I think we'll talk about that at the end, because I think that, well, I guess we could talk about it now because you had it up here in the beginning. How do I want to start this? Your theory is a theory that anyone could make and anyone would make about a television show that you think would be a natural conclusion. And like you're saying, I'm going into, well, we need to create angst and we need to do this and we need to do that. And this would do that. And this, to me, those are all conflating ideas with what the vision I know I've interpreted, I've invested in of the ship that is Rishon. Okay, so let's bring it back. All right, as you say, it's been 6 years. How long has it been before he smashed Michonne? Even when he had another person in front of him and he didn't even have feelings for this other person that he already know. Did he fuck that bitch? No, he did not fuck that bitch. Why? Because when he gives his heart and that is it. To death do us part. Death ain't parted us, which means you still have me. I still have you. Now, if Michonne were dead and it was confirmed that he thought she was dead, I would have 10 times more thought for your theory than I do. But because she's not dead, to me, the idea that Myrick Grimes, that I followed all this time, would know his family's out there, and just because he's stuck and he's decided to move on from escaping, that means, well, I'm going to go build a family over here. To me, that's an insult to the Rishon ship. So I take it, and it's not a, don't take it personal, because it's not really about talking out the other side in this case. It is simply the idea of, I can't entertain this idea because it would not fundamentally make sense. So it's not so much as, well, this is a possibility. Oh yeah, of course it's a possibility. If you're going to be a shitty writer, if you're going to be a shitty director, if you're going to be overall shitty. And then your other statement was angst has to be involved. No, that is not. That is a trope that often happens. Very true. But it does not always need to be involved and has not been involved in everything. And I can even tell a couple of shows, like between, who was it? My boo-boos. Because I always reference Westworld because I love it. And now that you've seen it, you know what I mean. But there are couples in there that don't have angst. No, and the show is just as exciting. The angst is, in my opinion, everything with the CRM. We're outmanned, we're outgunned, we're overwhelmingly in a position where we're at our lowest. How can we get out of that? Like you were saying, why did Rick bring her back when it doesn't even seem like he can get out of the situation? So all of that, and then the line was an interpretation of a line. Fair enough. If you want to think that she believed that, that's how you interpreted that line reading. I did not interpret that line reading at all in that manner. I interpreted as her once again saying and reiterating, we all want to be with someone else, but we are here. We're in this place and this is now home. Doesn't mean let's go raise this child together. Like, to me, that's a jump of logic. And of course, I'm not trying to be mean about it or be rude about dismissing, as you say, that particular thing as if it's out of the realm of possibility. And I think that's maybe the umbrage you take, is that I completely shut it down and acting like it can't be, or like you're talking crazy talk, even though I did just say that, because that's all crazy talk and how you ruin the show, and not in a good way. This is not a High School Musical or in that type of man. And you could say that, yeah, they did it in the past, but they did it with lesser characters. But sure, like I said, if you wanted me to say the exact words of, yes, you have a theory, yes, it can come true, yeah. Here's it me acknowledging, yes, Mimi, you have a theory that could come true, that would add a layer to angst and the things that, you know, you are expecting or could be expecting to see. Me personally, I'm the person that was in the camp when Jesse showed up that was like, this is bitch is not here to stay. This is just a plot point. I know what's happening. I'm not about to go into this side of the situation until I'm absolutely, definitively proven otherwise. And since I've taken that up stance, I've not been proven wrong yet. So I do apologize if I come off a little strong. But this is my number one. And I know you're saying other writers involved. That's a fair point. I just also don't like the implication it makes too, on a whole other level, that puts a nasty, like that theory to me, as shitty as it sounds, and please, you know, I love you, that sounds like something like a hater on the other side of things would do. Here's a prettier, or I'm just saying in that mindset, here's a long hair, straight haired, beautiful, because that's all I don't see any attraction between them. I don't see them doing anything or looking into each other's eyes to give any indication that he moved on. When you say, I guess that may be too, something I'm not getting. When you're saying moved on, you, to me, I took it as a romantic thing. And now in this one, you're saying, well, maybe it's a possible friendship. He can care about people. He cared about Esteban, and you talked to me for 2 years. Clearly, this is something type of relationship, and care for them, but that doesn't really bridge. Like you even just said, how he just changed sides right quick as soon as his wife showed up. He was like, "Fuck the CRM." You don't think the same thing applies to Thorne, and who he didn't even still at the end was not on board with? I think maybe I didn't take away the same bit of that conversation where she throws the glass at him and she's like, well, I saved one good man. And he's like, you didn't save shit. You didn't save me. I don't want, like, everything that you're trying to get me to drink the Kool-Aid of, I'm not into that flavor of lemonade, and I'm still trying to kill myself. And the only reason I haven't is because then there would be nothing and everything would be for nothing. So if I continue to move on from the idea of escaping this place, then I need to do something that's going to make sure that the world that you live in is better. That mindset to me does not coincide with moving on in a fashion that means involving other people to the point where it will be a problem. Does that make more sense? If I had seen any connective tissue that would indicate as much too, I think I would have been more like, okay, I hope they don't really do that, but okay. But I didn't even see that. All I saw was, as I just explained to you, she's a partner. And then what Andrew Lincoln said after in the thing was that she's kind of like family, but only in the sense that she's the only person who's been in his orbit for these past 9 years. And I think the timeline, because you were saying six, I was saying nine. He's actually been away from his family longer than Michonne has. I wish. Gave up on the idea of escaping a year. And then his last bit of dialogue is that it's to her saying, you know, I think that's where it sticks on between us, is you and me have a very different understanding of the word moving on. To me, moving on was Rick's goals. It had nothing to do with, and I still can't get over the fact that death ain't done them part and he knows his wife is out there. Like, I don't know if I could do that. Maybe that's just too also a difference of morality viewpoints, because if I knew my husband was out there and they're alive and we have a child together and he's taking care and I have faith, 100% faith that he's most likely going to be surviving with my child, but I'm the one that's stuck and can't get away. Well, sure, I might look for companionship, but like you said, if it's never say never, I feel like Rick made a decision that had everything to do with him not getting back to his family and nothing to do with him settling into the CRM, because he knows who these people are and what they are and has known. So that also doesn't make sense. So that's all it is. It's just the facts don't line up with that particular thought process with Thorn. And I think Thorn, I don't see them even being more of a team, other than Okafor picked them out for the same goal and she decided and she knows that he's a good person. I've seen very little on Rick's side that he sees himself, especially after she was like, don't say we. I think at that moment he was like, well, I guess we ain't friends. Not in the sense that, sure, we're going to be working on this same thing together, but when push comes to shove, there's not a choice to be made. Again, back to your point. Rick isn't lonely and looking for companionship. He's mentally bankrupt and now only wanting to do good in this world for the sacrifice that he's made. That's where I see him. And bringing in the whole, they got to make this thing angsty, that's a cop out. For all shows that try to do so. And because this show is six episodes, we don't have time to make it angsty. It's angsty enough at the fact that a man has to put a gun to his wife's head in a guise of protection. That's enough. I feel like the stakes are pretty fucking high. And now you throw someone else in high command who can ruin your entire life. And now the people that they love. Now that's I feel like that's enough. I think the whole romantic part of it, maybe in this is a question, don't take offense, a knee-jerk response to worst case scenario, so might as well prepare me now, because I also had a lot of people, friends back then in the Rochelle fandom doing that, where they're just like, well, it's going to happen, so I might as well just get ready for it, because they always fuck us around, and I get, there's nothing to say. Clearly, we've had enough shows we've watched together where the fuckery happens. I get that. But my faith has been strong this whole entire time, and I will not have my faith rocked with with theories that take me out of the experience that I know, that I believe in, is a love story and not a CW drama. As far as the CRM, they're trying to build a military dictatorship. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I did listen to some podcasts about the world beyond. And that's where people learn a lot of shit. That's when we learn that they bombed Omaha. If you only listen to the feedback section, you don't know. I think that they're trying to enact martial law with a dictator at the top of it. Rick took her out of fear. He knows that they're going to be on the scene. He knows that they're going to investigate, and he knows she could possibly be found out. So his knee-jerk response was, how do I get her out of this dangerous situation until I can, like you said, figure out what the fuck to do next? I think he had whatever he had was going on, but I could be wrong about that. And I acknowledge these things. I acknowledge when I'm wrong. Sometimes, most times, sometimes. But if I'm wrong about that, then he's just flying by night. But if he does have something going on, he's got to do some recalculations. I think it kind of scared her a bit, though, that he's probably thinking of getting away, sneaking away some kind of way, where she's like, no, we walking out the fucking front door and liberating the place when we go. Rick and Jadis, yes, I call her Jadakiss, they haven't seen each other in a while based on the conversation they had. And he only joined the military part of the CIM for about the last 2 years. I know the timelines are a little crazy. I want to say between 2 to 3 years. So he's gotten involved very recently. So more recently than not. Whereas she's gotten really deep into the CRM. She's one of the Reds and knows a lot more. And now his name is probably coming up and it's getting her attention. And now she finds out Michonne's here. And she wonders, what's the thing? Good call on the governor. And the line she said was, I lay with him after. Both Rick and Michonne were like, no, no. I hope I explained myself in all my levels of emotions upon your theory. It's been years. He's lonely. He needs some comfort. So he needs to put it in the first mocha cocoa chocolate that he sees. I know she's attractive, but fuck. And no, I didn't really think you were saying he would choose one or the other. No, just the idea, the concept, the thought process that he would be content to truly build a life within this community. That just never seemed like a possibility. We can always, of course, talk offline because I'm sure you'll have more to say. But I hope at least I expressed my emotions about it and why, and the levels of the emotions I felt about it. Not so much just at the idea that you had it. It's the idea that anyone would have it. If you have any thoughts, ideas, send feedback to blackercouch@gmail.com. You can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.